The Christmas morning effect is the anticipation and excitement one would feel before unwrapping their gifts. There's an element of mystery in the unknown.
Hey, podcast listener. You're about to discover insider tips, tricks, and secrets to making more sales and converting more prospects into customers with email marketing. For more information about the Email Marketing Podcast or the Autoresponder Guy, go to dropdeadcopy.com/podcast. Hey, it's Johnny McIntyre here, the Autoresponder Guy, and it's time for episode 41 of the McMethod Email Marketing Podcast, where you'll discover tactics and strategies to increase your email profits by 25 to 100% in 90 days or less without spending more on advertising. Today, I'll be talking to a good friend. His name is John Myers. He is an awesome designer. And I'll tell you one quick story, and then I'll tell you what he's going to share, and then we'll get into it. About 3 or 4 months ago, I was at a conference in Bangkok, and John Myers was speaking about design. He actually had this awesome way of entering the stage. What he did, he got a smoke machine, right? And he set the smoke machine up in the front of the stage, something like that, and he was out of the room or something. And so when the announcer, the MC, said, all right, it's John Myers' turn to come up, I think what he did, he put the smoke machine, set that up, that starts spewing out smoke. You know what it looks like at a dance party or a rave party. Then he has some high energy music going on, rock and roll music or some dance music, something like that. Okay, and then he gets up on stage, and once it calms down, it relaxes, and people are listening, he goes, that is design. Now, this is typical of John Myers. See, as a copywriter, I've noticed that a lot of marketers and copywriters like me don't believe in design. And, you know, in some ways, it's justified because, you know, it is the words that do the selling, not the design, for the most part. I've talked with John a lot, actually, about this. You know, words are important. Words are great. You're never going to be able to replace words with design. But design, when it's done right, when it's done the John Myers way, it can be incredible, just like this presentation he did at this conference. Can you imagine if you saw someone like that who entered, well, you know, when was the last speaker that you saw came up on stage with a smoke machine and some dance music? And given that none of the other speakers do something like this, that's a huge pattern interrupt. You'd be like, who the hell does this guy think he is? And you'd probably listen to everything he says. So this guy, John, he knows his shit. Now, today we're going to talk about empathy and more importantly, how empathy should inspire design. And obviously the copywriting, the marketing, but also design. If you wanted to bundle this up into one concept, it would be, according to John Myers, how to create the Christmas morning effect. That's that feeling, you know, when you're 6 years old and you go to bed, it's Christmas Eve, and the next morning you wake up and you are so excited. You rush downstairs, you look under the Christmas tree, and there are some presents. Then you race to open them, and it's just that Christmas morning effect, that anticipation, that desire. That's what we're trying to create. And we can do this with design, with empathy, with a few different things. That's what John's going to talk about today. Now, to get the show notes for this episode of the McMethod Email Marketing Podcast, go to themcmethod.com/41. Now, before we get into that, I have one listener question today. This is a really good one. It's for the people out there who have customers or who have prospects and clients. So those of you out there who are working with clients. Mark says, basically, let's say I've set up an autoresponder for the first time and I'm warming up leads that subscribe on my website, which is great. So it's already working. All right, so Mark's doing the right thing here. But his second question, or the main question here, is that he's got 200 existing clients that he wants to connect with via email. What's the best way to start reaching them? Should I create a new list for my clients? Should I, you know, is it okay to add my clients to the list without their express permission? And when someone becomes a client, should I ask them if they are already on my autoresponder so I can transition them? Essentially, how do I manage clients and general subscribers? So here's the thing. In an ideal world, as soon as someone goes from being a prospect or a subscriber to a client, they would be moved off your prospect list and onto your client list. That's absolutely how it would work. But unfortunately, not every piece of software does that. Aweber certainly doesn't. That's what Mark is using. And that means that the options are limited. And there may be a way to, if you can make clients sign up for something, as in add themselves to your list, that would be the way to do it. You know, when you say close a new deal, you send them a link and you say, put your email address in here, and, you know, and then that'll send you all the information you need to get started, whether it's a questionnaire or something like that. That would be ideally how it worked, because if you go and, Mark, if you go and add people to your Aweber list manually, it's going to send them, as far as I know, it's going to send them a confirmation email regardless. Aweber's not going to let you just import leads that have never really given you permission. I would say it's fine. I would say that if they are clients, then add them to the list, add them to your client list, and I don't think you need to ask them because they're clients. Just make sure that there's a way to opt out if they want to opt out. It all depends what you use it for. It's kind of like some people get away with sending spam because they make sure it's valuable spam. Now, I'm not saying spam is good and that you should go and do this, but it's just the idea that at the end of the day, the permission is less important than whether you're actually helping them or not helping them. If you're not helping them, it doesn't matter that you have their permission. It's not going to work and they're going to hit the spam complaints and all that. Whereas, you know, even if you say don't have their permission, their direct permission in this case, I think with clients, you'll be fine. Don't quote me on that. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an internet lawyer who knows all the spam laws and things like that. But I think you would be fine. And I would certainly do it myself. Now, I've actually got a thing set up on my site. If you go and use a contact form on my site, you'll be added to kind of like a prospect client list in AWeber. You can do that with Gravity Forms. Anyway, the point is, in an ideal world, you would be moving people around from prospect list to client list. But it's not always that easy. Mark, if you want to move those 200 leads somewhere, I'm not sure on the best solution there. That's kind of technical. You could probably import them into AWeber, but AWeber is almost definitely going to send them a confirmation email. Contact AWeber and see what they say. And this is why more advanced stuff like Infusionsoft or Office Autopilot can be useful. I think you can do this automatically, or you could just log into the CRM and find your prospect that you've just signed on as a client, and you could just move them across from the prospect to the client list. That would be another way to do it. So there's basically a million ways to skin this cat. It's up to you to figure out what works for you based on your budget and how involved you want to get. That. Hope that answers your question, Mark. Now let's get into this interview with John Myers and find out how to create the Christmas morning effect. It's John McIntyre here, the autoresponder guy. I'm here with John Myers, a designer and entrepreneur who's been making things on the internet look beautiful for over 15 years. He's founded a number of successful startups. Now, I first met John in a private forum, and then I met him in Bangkok, kind of like a business seminar. He presented there, and everyone just kept raving about him. Every time his name came up in conversation, it's always because someone had something to say about his design skills. I know this is the email marketing podcast, and we talk a lot about how to write emails and email marketing and empathy. I'm going to try and find a link to John's design skills because he believes in empathy and really tries to tap into empathy and apply that basically to when he does design. So that's how we're going to link it through here and how to do it differently and how to use empathy to drive design and then to drive kind of like landing pages and your emails as well. So we'll get into that in just a minute. How are you going today, John?
I'm great, man. Thanks for that introduction. Wow.
Before we get into the Christmas morning effect, give us a bit of a background on, you know, who is John Myers and what does he do?
Who is this John Myers? Like you said, I'm a designer. I've been doing user interface design and user experience design for digital products and services for quite a long time. Founded a number of startups, mainly business-to-business startups. Currently, I've been spending most of my time in Southeast Asia and East Asia, just sort of, you know, getting connected in this region and working with some startups in this region.
It sounds like you're able to live in Asia. This isn't really the topic of the podcast, but you can live in Southeast Asia, whether it's Thailand or Vietnam or Taipei, and you can actually do some serious business stuff because it sounds like you're working with startups. It's not just retire and live on the beach, is it?
No, it's not actually. It's pretty interesting. You know, if you have the right systems and processes and relationships in place, then yeah, you can leverage those to pretty much work from anywhere and practice your craft of design.
Let's get into this Christmas morning effect and talk about how the hell do you create this, whether it's with a landing page or a sales page, or say, I guess you can apply this to launches and just emails in general, just marketing, because all this is marketing, which is, you know, getting someone from where they are now to the point where they're buying your product. So what is the Christmas morning effect?
The Christmas morning effect is the anticipation and excitement one would feel before unwrapping their gifts. There's an element of mystery in the unknown. There is the sort of visual effect of, you know, the sparkling Christmas tree, you know, waiting to see what's under there. And then ultimately you sort of have an idea of what you think you're getting. And then you tear into the gifts and hopefully you get what you want. And then sometimes people are disappointed too.
Right.
You know, just boiled down really simply, it's that anticipation and the satisfaction of getting something that you anticipated and wanted.
Okay, so there's two things going on here. That you got to have the anticipation built up. You got to make sure that the product lives up to the anticipation, or it's a kind of, you got to have both for this to be a win-win.
Yeah, you do. And if you sort of observe kids on that Christmas morning when they've got all their toys sitting around, so they'll get bored with certain ones really quick, didn't really, you know, add up to what they thought. So that's one thing.
Well, they play with the wrapping paper all day.
Yeah, it can actually probably be more interesting than the toys. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so what we're really trying to do here with this Christmas morning effect is when we have a product or something that we're trying to sell, we want to keep people up at night thinking about it because they're going to be able to buy it tomorrow. This is kind of what Apple does. Apple does this really well with the iPhone. People line up outside the store with sleeping bags just so they can buy the iPhone.
Yeah, that's right. And so to kind of tee this up into marketing, right? So, you know, what does Apple do that triggers that response and behavior? You know, they've built up that anticipation through potent metaphors and potent associations that people remember. And it makes people feel a certain way. And it motivates them to wait in line for a product that they haven't seen or touched, or that they haven't seen in person or touched in person.
Right. Now, is this something that only applies to launches, or can this can be like an ongoing marketing thing that you can do for your business?
I think it can be an ongoing thing. I think you want to always constantly surprise your audience. So, you know, in the case of email marketing, you know, those landing pages and how potent, rememberable, and succinct your messages are really important to creating that anticipation for what you're delivering in the inbox.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's get a bullet point here that says, what is design thinking? So that tells me that design thinking fits into the picture here. What is design thinking?
You know, there's a lot of different approaches to understanding sort of, you know, what design thinking is. For me, it's just the system to facilitate action. Design thinking is envisioning the entire process, envisioning the outcome, and figuring out how you're going to facilitate action to get people to do what they're there to do, what they want to do, and what you want them to do.
So it all comes back to, so we've got a framework here to think in. Then we have the Christmas morning effect.
Right.
If someone's listening to this, they want to know how to actually do it. So I got four questions here, and I just sent them over to you. And so let's go through these questions. I mean, how does Apple do it? How do you kind of do what Apple does, you know, create this buzz, whether it's for a launch or whether it's an ongoing thing, whether it's for emails or landing pages or whatever you're doing it for?
I think the first step is to immerse yourself in understanding and observation. So if you're there serving an audience, you want to be able to form this empathic profile of your users. And the way you do that is by immersing yourself and observing them, and then also looking at hard data. And so, for example, you know, observing your target audience using said product or service or a competing service, noting that, and then figuring out what the pain points are that you can improve upon. To get to that point, it's really about deep understanding and observation and figuring out, where are your customers? Are they online? Are they talking about what's aggravating them? Are they on forums discussing that? Are they in person? Do you have opportunities in person to dig into these things? So those are all opportunities to understand and observe what people do and improve upon it.
Sounds like, so this is point number one, or question number one, is it seems like it's all about the empathy. It's kind of getting inside their head, not just kind of like, what are the facts about what's going on for them? Like, what are they feeling right now when they wake up in the morning, when they go to bed, when they get on the train, when they go to work, or when they're thinking about the problem that your product solves? What are they feeling at that moment? What limiting beliefs are running through their head? Do they feel empowered, or what challenges are going through? What do they feel is holding them back? Or, you know, do they feel guilty about something? So it's kind of like, you know, there's a famous saying, it's from Robert Collier, but so many people seem to try and say that it's theirs, but it's, you got to enter the conversation that's already going on in their head, because that's where it starts, right? You start there, and then that's where we get the fodder to know where to go to create the Christmas morning effect. We need to know where they're at right now before we can help them envision a new future, which is point two, right?
Yeah, that is. And just to add to that point, this is a really important point. So when you're sort of designing these sequences, I find that the most potent impacts you can have on your audience are when you anticipate their needs in a way they didn't expect. There's a great book, Social Intelligence, by Daniel Goleman. And in that book, he has an anecdotal story about a Japanese businessman visiting an American colleague. And the businessman is getting in late at night. He hasn't eaten dinner. It's midnight. And he's starving to death. But the family didn't anticipate his needs and have a meal waiting on him. He didn't have warm blankets waiting on him. And so they missed an opportunity there to sort of wow that visitor. And in Japanese culture, I forget the word that's described in the book, there's a way of anticipating one's needs or your guest's needs. And in this case, in context, that would be your customer's needs. If you anticipate those needs, you can be really powerful and take a powerful edge over your competitors.
Okay, so give me an example about how you've done this with, say, a product or a service in the past.
It could be as simple. So if you are writing a proposal, for example, you know, so you're interacting with a potential customer. A lot of people just take a proposal and they'll, you know, whip together a crappy Word document and send it out there. But what if you provided a deep analysis? So in my case, as a designer, right? You know, someone comes to me and they want me to, you know, redesign a site. I might respond with a deep analysis of their site, provide a document with clear steps of how to improve their site, and then say, here's, you know, my thoughts and proposal on this project. So you deliver something that was unexpected.
Question number two then, envisioning a new future. So we've kind of, let's say we've nailed them where they're at. We understand what's going through their head. And now you're talking about over-delivering or kind of getting to the point where you understand what you anticipate their needs before they even, you know, anticipate themselves. So you understand them better than they understand themselves. How do you kind of go from where they're at? How do you identify the sort of things that are going to help them, you know, envision this new future? You know, Apple does it, for example. I guess getting people to imagine what it's going to be like, you know, how cool they're going to be. They never seem to say this outright, but how cool people are going to be if you have the new iPhone.
You know, Apple are the geniuses of democratizing coolness. You know, I think, so you're asking about envisioning a new future and basically what if. And so this is me personally as a designer. What I like to do to envision a new future or potentially a better solution for whatever problem I'm trying to solve, what I do is I try to connect things that don't seem like they're related. And to me, that's one of the most powerful ways of envisioning the future is taking something that doesn't seem like it's related to the task or problem you're trying to solve and seeing if you can fit that in a way that might make sense. So for example, what lessons could you learn from Toyota's supply chain automation and apply that to your email marketing? I bet you there are some interesting and powerful lessons to be learned from how they're managing their supply chain, and you could apply that in an unconventional way to your business. And to me, you know, because everybody's always cracking at the same problems, their vision of the future in the same way. It's a very linear process. So if you're taking things that aren't related, seemingly, and applying them in an unconventional way, you might get an edge.
I actually spoke to someone recently who said that the key of marketing was doing this exact thing, was looking at what other people are doing in different industries and then applying that to your own. When you're trying to get to marketing ideas, never go and look at the other stuff in the same industry. Always go outside that. Always go and look for exactly what you said, something that Toyota's doing that you could apply to email marketing. I mean, go back to Apple, Steve Jobs went and learned calligraphy for a while, which someone might, you know, at the time might have been like, what the hell are you learning calligraphy for?
Exactly, right?
But then that all transferred into, you know, making Apple a real design focus for Apple and making it look extremely beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, if Steve Jobs had not studied calligraphy, we might still be stuck with atrocious web typography and typography on computers in general. Who knows?
Well, this is really good. Now, number three, what wows? What makes people think, wow, what are we talking about here?
Well, that kind of gets back to that initial point and anecdote I was talking about, the business traveler, which is anticipating people's needs and delivering value in an unexpected way. To get back to the story I was talking about, you know, so if I'm delivering a proposal, it's not just a proposal, it's an opportunity to deliver value and unexpected value. So, you know, wowing people is about surprising them with something that they did not anticipate.
So I know you just worked on a product for like digital downloads. How have you applied some of, say, this example of point three of what wows? How have you applied this, say, that product?
For digital downloads? So digital downloads are interesting, right? And digital products in general, because the biggest challenge with digital products is you're trying to make something intangible feel tangible. And that's the biggest challenge. So when you think about it, I'm never satisfied usually, you know, when I pay $50 or $100 for, you know, a PDF. Now, it might be really potent information that's extremely valuable, but it's not satisfying. There's not a wow factor that often. And so to me, in the context of, say, digital downloads, it's how can you link up metaphors and packaging and ways of putting together that digital product in a way that does have visual impact and a usefulness to it. So, you know, in that case, it's, I think, very specifically making something intangible feel tangible and like it has real value.
So how do you do that? I mean, for an ebook, how would you make an ebook feel tangible?
I think some of the guys that have done a great job in this space, I don't know if you've been following Nathan Barry. That guy's doing just a killer job. And so what Nathan's doing is he's selling digital books online. So he's got like an app design handbook, designing web applications. He's got a great book on authority, and he's killing it. And what he's doing, if you look at how his landing pages are excellent looking, and then I've bought a few of these just because I'm curious, you know, and the deliverables, there's resources, there's videos, they come packaged up in a nice directory. There's a little HTML mini site that is part of the sort of deliverables for this digital product. So it feels like you're getting something substantial when you're paying $100 for that. And obviously they use really great design as well, so that it just feels valuable.
Because you're a designer, I guess you probably focus a lot on the design aspect when you're, I guess, looking for something to buy. Is it just as important for people that aren't? Like, say, when I go around, I'm looking for products to buy. I feel like I don't care that much about design. But in your experience, does design matter with everyone, or does it just matter with designers?
I think the thing is as a designer, and I've been focused on this on design for so long, that I have a vocabulary to describe what bothers me about bad design or ill-thought design. But I don't think most people have this sort of like thought process or vocabulary to describe it. People do instinctively know sort of good design versus bad design, even if they can't articulate it because they haven't really thought about the problem or what it is that much. But I think there's certain things that are just important with everything, you know, so or with any product. In terms of sort of presentation, I think people are getting more sophisticated in their taste and taste level for well-designed products. I think that, like, if you were to launch Craigslist today, do you think it would be successful? I mean, come on. So, you know, I mean, people do appreciate it, right? You know, I mean, the only reason why Craigslist is still around now is because of scale. You know, like if Airbnb, which is one of the sort of unbundled verticals that is taking a slice of Craigslist, right? And they've created this new market. If they had an aesthetic and user experience that was like Craigslist, I guarantee you it wouldn't be successful.
Applying this to landing pages, are you saying that like the classic direct response copywriting, you know, landing page with a big red headline at top and some bullet points, do you think that, what do you think about those landing pages?
Oh man, I hope the audience doesn't slay me. No, man. It all depends on your audience. I wouldn't be comfortable sort of giving like a general thing. I think generally speaking, man, that stuff just feels like a fossil. I think some of the elements are always true. So like, you know, the copy is one of the number one things. You know, if there's bad copy, there's nothing that a good design is going to do to clean up bad copy. You need professionally designed and curated copy. But that said, you know, and I think some of the other things on a landing page, the elements of social proof and all that sort of components, that's kind of the same. You know, I don't see that going away. It's just how you're organizing it has changed.
Landing pages and copywriting and headlines and bullets, all that's still important, but just not with like a, you know, white background with big red text with like, you know, giant red arrows that point at an opt-in box on the right-hand side of the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think personally, you know, it's kind of subliminally saying something to the audience. I know people still kill it with that kind of stuff. You know, they've done tests. It just depends on the audience. But I think generally speaking, if you're selling a product that you want to be around in 5 years, you invest in the right assets for your business, and design is one of those assets.
Right. Like you'd never see Apple, say, one of these kind of landing pages for lead gen for the, you know, the iPhone.
You know, I've even seen it changing. So in some of the sort of typical, let's say, affiliate marketing niches or something like that, like, say, supplements, just over the last, you know, I've been in this for a long time, and so I've seen the nature of those landing pages change quite a bit. Right now, the sort of like supplement style landing pages, they're still stuck on like skeuomorphic design and heavy gradients and all that. And eventually, it'll probably look like some of the more contemporary design stuff now, which is like flat, and that aesthetic's big right now. But you'll see everybody sort of shift again. They'll be like a couple years behind.
Well, let's moving on then. So if you go into what works, that's question four.
That's actually a great segue, right? So, you know, we were just talking about in some cases, maybe the yellow highlighter, red text landing pages work. That's fine. But you should test it. These are things that are always in a constant state of flux. And so if you think of your marketing approach as this system being centralized and decentralized, right? So there's certain things that work and then they kind of fall apart. And then you have to kind of just keep testing back and forth. So there's never a right way to do it. But, and that's part of the design process too, right? Is that sequence of creating that effect from the moment someone hears the name of your company, that's an insertion opportunity to insert a thought, how you follow up on reinforcing that thought through your marketing, and then once they actually get your product, how they think and feel about it. So designing that sequence and figuring out what works is a constant iterative process.
One thing I was thinking of then is that like if you're doing the yellow highlighter, red text, all that stuff,
yeah,
that's not really like the Christmas morning effect. That's like the standard, like let's market these people as hard as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's like standing on a street corner with a trench coat and watches underneath it. You know, you're just trying to sell it as quick as possible. So yeah. Like, there's not really, you're not interested in a long-term value proposition.
But so by taking the long-term approach, you do things more what?
I think just more thoughtful, right? If you're not really putting any thought into the overall design. And so one thing that we should be really clear about, we're not talking about aesthetic. We're talking about how your system works. That is what design is. And aesthetic and how things look is just one part of that system to support your message and your product that you're delivering. And so that's really a really, really important point to think about.
Okay, I've never thought about it like that. I've always thought about design as what you see on the page.
Yeah, it's to me, it's about how it works and how the look of it supports how it works.
Because you're building kind of like an architecture of the product.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, man. Well, we're right on time. So before we go, though, tell people if they want to learn more about you or, you know, maybe hire you or talk to you more about this, where can people find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. It's JonMyers.com, JonMyers.com. And I'm actually in the process of, I swear, I'm going to launch it, relaunch my personal site here. It's coded up, ready to go, so you guys can beat me up on my design. And then I'm on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to reach me. So I'm at John Myers, JonMyers. So I'd love to talk about this stuff. And if anybody has any questions, you can also ping me in the comments here. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I have a link to your site down in the show notes. And you're on Twitter as well, down at dropdeadcopy.com. So thank you. Thanks for your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Everybody, thanks for listening. If you want to discover more insider tips, tricks, and secrets about driving sales with email marketing, sign up for daily email tips from the Autoresponder Guy. Go to dropdeadcopy.com/podcast. Sign up, confirm your email address, and I'll send you daily emails on how to improve your email marketing and make more sales via email. You'll find out why open rates don't matter and the 7-letter word that underlies all effective marketing and much more. The editing and production of this podcast were provided by Authority Engine. Learn more at authorityengine.com.